So good afternoon. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for August 30th, 2012. Welcome. The meeting is now in session. As you know from the agenda, this is the start of approximately a two-day session or day and a half. So we'll adjourn this evening at approximately 5:10, and we will continue our public meeting tomorrow, Friday, at 8:30 for the second part of our agenda. In addition to council members and new council members observing, there are also on the telephone Mr. Mark Robinson joining us by teleconference. As you know, and as I say at every meeting, and one of these days I'm going to stop saying it, I remind council members that our meetings are audiocast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. So for the benefit of the online audience and for council members joining us by phone, please speak into your microphones so that listeners and the readers can follow the conversation and the conversation. For this two-day meeting, I do appreciate Justice Miller and the Executive and Planning Committee being willing to adjust what has become our public comment process to accommodate judicial officers who wish to address the council on a specific agenda item but are unable to attend our business meeting tomorrow when the agenda item will be called. So that we'll be hearing from some of those folks today. I'm also grateful once again to Ms. Ana Matasantos, Director of the State Department of Finance, for agreeing to open our meeting today with a budget update and discussion. We all know that every branch of government in California faces harsh fiscal realities and difficult choices, but I know that you all share in the belief that honest dialogue and cooperation with each branch will yield short and long-term solutions. So item one will be the presentation of the by the Department of Finance, the budget update. I ask Ms. Ana Matasantos to come to the panel. Welcome.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, Council, for the opportunity to come speak with you a little bit today about the budget and changes reflected in the Budget Act, as well as our work together going forward. As you know, in putting together the May revision, we, the Department of Finance, as we discussed previously, undertook the effort of trying to get a clearer sense of the state of funding and the level of funding provided to the trial courts versus the review courts and the judicial council in the budget, and get a clear sense of, you know, what had happened up until this point. And through that process, we learned and we saw and had a clear sense of the work that you have done, the council, to figure out how to redirect and provide additional resources to try to provide as much stable funding as possible for the trial courts, and what we had seen in terms of the level of reductions to the other levels of the courts. As part of putting together the May revision, in addition to getting a clear sense of what was the state of affairs from a funding standpoint, and not only what was displayed in the budget, but through subsequent actions, what was the real funding level provided to the different elements, we took a look at kind of where we were relative to implementation of trial court funding and the reforms of the late 1990s and subsequent changes in law, and looked at kind of what was the role of reserves and in what is now generally a state-funded program. As part of that, you know, as part of that review and as part of that work came the governor's May revision proposals and the efforts reflected in the Budget Act to, number one, create a greater sense of transparency and provide clear level of appropriation, kind of abandon the approach that had been used for a number of years of doing unallocated reductions to the judiciary and instead going to a position of figuring out what's the appropriate funding level that the legislature wants to provide for each category, for each level of the judiciary. The reserve policy going forward has been modified, looking at the legislature's judgment and the executive branch judgment about what makes, from our perspective, greater sense in terms of continuing to work towards a state-funded judiciary and continuing to move forward on the goals of equal access to justice and eliminating some of the bifurcated structures that existed in the past, and doing that at a time that is, you know, very difficult for us to do that. That provided an opportunity to both not only do structural changes as well as try to figure out how to use available resources to reduce the effect of reductions into programs, even though we understand, as you've so eloquently talked about at different points in time, the difficult position that the branch is in and the difficult reductions that you're having to make to manage the level of resources that the legislature and the executive branch is in a position to provide at this time. In terms of work going forward, that as part of the May revision, there was discussion of creating a work group that we look forward to working with you on to do more work on review of where we are, the budgeting structures and the administrative structures relative to accomplishing the goals set forth in trial court reform, and looking at issues of where we are structurally, the level of funding provided, but also issues of consistency and whether our administrative structures are in place in a manner that's consistent with what the goals of the Act. In terms of working together, we look forward to continuing to develop, strengthen a good productive partnership, working with you on your priorities for the branch, the level of resources that we have available, and working to manage together the work that we do to provide services to Californians in times of less resources. So I'll stop with that and just answer questions, and happy to look forward to having a discussion with you.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Ms. Matosantos, first of all, thank you very much for being here. We all appreciate it very much. I'm a trial judge. I'm also the presiding judge of my court, and I also serve as chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee. So I talk to the presiding judges of the trial courts all the time. And I must tell you that my colleagues, the presiding judges and assistant presiding judges, are starting to tell me that they are sensing a constitutional crisis. And those are the words that they're using. We all care about equal access to justice. That's really driving a lot of what we do. I know it's driving what the governor and you are looking at. And courts are starting to hit the bottom. Now, this isn't about judges. This is about the people we serve, the public. We have close to 2,000 judges and commissioners and referees. And in my opinion, the minimum we have to provide this branch is sufficient resources. And when I say 2,000 judges, I'm talking at the trial level. The minimum we have to provide is the ability for those judges to have a courtroom and a clerk and a reporter where necessary and a bailiff and the infrastructure so they can do their job. I can't emphasize enough how We do need to view this branch as a co-equal branch. We are unique in government. There's only two other entities like us in this government. One is the governor's office, and the other is the legislature. We are supposed to be an equal branch. What makes us a little different is there's 2,000 of us. But we're all constitutional officers, and we're all trying to do the job the legislature and the governor have assigned to us. In a way, the cutbacks that have occurred in the branch would be similar to giving the legislature sufficient funding for 100 members. There are 120 members in the legislature. And you wouldn't for a moment think of funding the legislature in a way that could support only 100 offices. Every member of the legislature has to have sufficient funding to do their job. Same is true for judges. And we're seeing court closures, we're seeing cutbacks in services, and we're on the midst, or at least the beginnings, of what may be a constitutional crisis if we can't do our job. So I really look forward to this working group forming. I hope it forms sooner rather than later, because I think we can do a lot to educate each other about what your needs are and what our needs are.
Ms. Matosantos, I know we've talked about the same goals and access to justice and understanding the priorities of the judicial branch for a Department of Finance and the administration. And I'm wondering if you've thought about or can tell now what it is you might need from us in order to achieve a sustainable, predictable, intelligent, ongoing ability to plan budget that serves the needs of the public, civil and criminal, in such a way that doesn't result in what Judge Rosenberg has described and what you know and we know is going on in the other 57 counties and the courts of appeal and the Supreme Court.
Thank you. I mean, I think in terms of going forward, I think one is process and kind of how we work together. The other is information. In terms of working together, I think regular exchange of communication and working together, which I think we do, but it's always an area that we can do a better job on in terms of making sure that as we're putting together the governor's budget, as we're putting together the May revision, and as we're working with the legislature on finalizing the budget, that we have a clear sense of, you know, needs, priorities, opportunities. If there are ideas that you have identified that would be changes that we could be in support of that would help in terms of making things more efficient or providing opportunity for savings, being able to work together, on those. One of the things that we're always trying to better understand at finance is, for example, when we're looking at, you know, the construction program, for example, and we're looking at particular changes and new facilities, being able to have the data and the better understanding of, you know, how do you see some of those changes and some of those investments providing opportunities in terms of savings, getting access to information, getting access to some of the data so that we can understand and try to make kind of apples to apples comparison. As Judge Rosenberg speaks to, there are key things that are definitely going to be things that one has to have in the context of operating a courtroom, but getting a better understanding about what is driving the relative cost of those things from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and getting a clear sense of, you know, what are some of the things that provide and account for differences in funding the same type of unit of service in different jurisdictions and working towards that. I think, you know, the more that we can work together to have the information, to understand the similarities and the differences, the opportunities for efficiency, ways in which we can be supportive of the goals and the work that you're trying to do, and we'll do, we'll make sure that we are clear and consistent in terms of being able to make sure that, you know, that you understand the kind of the broader fiscal picture that we're looking at. These are and continue to be difficult times. Our goal is to work towards a balanced budget that provides a stable level of funding, stable, not necessarily being enhanced level of funding that folks would like to see, and how we can, so being able to work through this together to make sure that we have information that gives us a clear sense of where are the similarities, where are differences, where are we relative to accomplishing the goals of ending a bifurcated funding system, where are we relative to are there things that we can do to make sure that we understand where the opportunities for savings are, where the priorities and the needs are, and that we can work through that in the traditional budget cycles.
And I think that we're well poised to be able to explain to the administration and the legislature, frankly, our needs and our priorities. I realize that in terms of opportunities and efficiencies and data, that will involve, as I see it, judicial council members and leaders potentially getting information from users to be able to refine some of the opportunities and that we think exist, and then to discuss priorities and then interface with you about how much of that is doable and accessible and what it is we can do to enhance and to create a predictable, sustainable, intelligent judicial branch budget. I have a question on the timeline. I know that we are looking at a very important November election, and then we're into January, where it is the building of the governor's budget, and then we're into May, where we're looking at the revise after April's collection of income tax. So in terms of as soon as, it sounds like time is of the essence in terms of opportunities and efficiencies and the data you'd need to make decisions on that. Is that correct?
It is indeed.
Thank you. Judge Rubin.
Good afternoon, Ms. Matisanos. I'm David Rubin. I'm president of the California Judges Association. I'm also in my day job. I'm a judge in San Diego County. I preside over a family law court. I wanted to just share with you a couple observations. First of all, thank you for coming again for a second time to address us. It is significant to us that you would come, and I'm sure you're doing this all over the state. I imagine the audiences may be more or less receptive, but we're certainly grateful that you are here. Obviously, I see a level of stress in the folks that come before me, as do all of my colleagues around this table, that is very hard to explain to people in terms of we have children who are living in cars. We have, before we can get to them because of the budget cuts, we just simply can't. And no matter how efficient we are at reorganizing as the branch contracts under the weight of the cuts, we simply can't cut any further in a way that doesn't jeopardize public safety and what have you. And so I wanted to encourage you to continue talking to us about these very real impacts that these cuts are having on the day-to-day lives of the folks who we come in contact with. I think we invite the public scrutiny because I think the more the public looks at our branch and what we do, the more impressive we become. We're very good about trying to keep ourselves out of the limelight, but we're actually, when people look at us, they're very, very impressed. As Judge Rosenberg stated, there are less than 2,000 of us dripping wet in terms of justices, judges, commissioners, and referees, and yet there are 37 million people in the state, and we have been providing service to them, notwithstanding all these budget cuts. In any event, I wanted to encourage you to keep this investigation up. My members are anxious that the work that we do be understood, at least, and it sounds like that you're getting a fair picture of that, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Commissioner Alexander.
I had a couple of questions. You talked at other times about the trial court reform and statewide funding. From your perspective, are you looking for things such as salaries being equivalent around the state, or what does the statewide mean? Is it similar to an agency where there's regional differences, but it's basically the same as opposed to county by county? I'm not exactly sure what you mean with the statewide issue of the courts doing funding.
From my perspective, the first thing that I'm looking at is to partner with you to understand what is, and to understand what are the factors that are underlying what is. But in thinking about a state funded judiciary. We look also at what are the structures that we've created, what are the extent to which the structure is consistent with in the budgetary structure and the way in which funding is provided, and the way in which costs and things are managed is consistent with a statewide judiciary system. There are a lot of the, and we want to, the first step is understanding what is, understanding the data, and in terms of where the understanding the data takes decision makers and takes policy makers, and what the priorities are for the chief of the council, what the priorities are for the governor, what the priorities are for the legislature. My job is to primarily make sure that I'm doing the analysis, understanding the information, and providing policymakers the opportunity to understand those and make the policy choices as appropriate by the different branches.
And then the other thing is, when you spoke previously, you had said something, my understanding was in May, it was even if we spend a dollar today would save us $5 3 years from now, we don't have the dollar today. Is that changing, or are we still looking at we don't have the money now, so even if it would save money later and we could show an efficiency now that would result in savings, that's still not on the board yet because we don't have the dollar?
We and one of the things that I should have mentioned when in response to the chief's question that I was my bad not to mention, was that the part of this and part of the communication and part of the understanding of the priorities is understanding whether is insufficient money to take care of the priority? What are the highest priorities? And how do we work together to make sure that within the level of resources that we do the best we can to provide the tools necessary for the branch to do its job and its business in terms of where we are and our budget situation? As we talked about last time, our general fund spending is at levels comparable to where it was in the 1970s, and our total fund spending is at levels comparable to where it's been during recessionary periods in the 90s and before. We continue to have, we are in recovery. We are, leading the nation in jobs recovery in terms of in the state, but our revenues continue to be substantially lower than they were in 2007-08. I mean, as a point of comparison, our school districts are, their level of funding, the general fund support that we're providing is $9 billion below the actual level of dollars that they received in 2007-08. Our level of funding for a variety of programs is where it was in the 1980s, in terms of the level of support that we're providing. So the resources that, being in public service and doing this work during times of diminished resources is particularly important and particularly difficult. And as the chief mentioned, the November election is going to have significant impacts in terms of a financial future. But we are in a time of limited resources, and we are in a time of continuing to manage through those. And based on some of the decisions of the past, we also have the circumstance where a significant portion of our budget is dedicated to paying back borrowing from the past. So this year, for example, we're spending about $5 billion of our budget paying for prior budgetary programs and budgetary borrowing. And that's dollars that's not available to support program today, but it is money that is committed and has to continue to be spent to those expenditures. So unfortunately, our goal and what we're working towards is stable, but stable is not necessarily stable in lots of resources type of way.
David. Thank you, Chief. Ms. Matasas, thank you very much for appearing before us today. David Yamasaki, I'm the court exec in Santa Clara County. I think earlier you've heard from a couple of the other speakers from other courts who've been able to implement technology to help them sustain some of the reductions. Unfortunately, my court being in Silicon Valley, we do not have many of the technologies that are available that would really make positive differences, not only in serving the community, but also just helping us operate much more efficiently. We had put together some changes that have enabled us to accumulate some savings. We are trying to move in that direction. I had a recent occasion to take a look at a document that was filed in 1912, and I'm embarrassed to say that we have documents today that look much like those documents. And what we are planning to do, what we have been planning to do, is implement document management to help us absorb some of the reductions. We operate very differently around the state, but clearly our objective is to, try to serve the public as efficiently as possible. But we need to capitalize on some of the advantages that some of the other courts have implemented, things that have worked. We've taken a little bit of the information from Orange County, document management. We're trying to implement that in our court. And the way we're able to do that is by putting together some of those savings and reinvesting in the future. We are hoping to use some of that savings for e-filing and case management systems as well. And it is that savings that we've been able to put together to help us move forward and fund partially our courthouse. So the point that I'm trying to make is that we have different approaches to putting together our business plans. We're obviously looking to move towards the future implement technology, and the position to eliminate the fund balances very much jeopardizes our ability to incorporate some of the changes that we've heard from your office and certainly the legislature to operate more efficiently. And this is just an opportunity for me to express the importance, the good work that some of those savings produce in the long haul.
Thank you. Judge Herman.
Thank you again for coming. And I'm speaking as the chair of our Judicial Council Technology Committee as well as chair of my court's IT committee in Santa Barbara County. And following up on Mr. Yamasaki's comments, to put this in a very real context, I was formerly a juvenile court PJ in Santa Barbara for 3.5 years, and my neighboring county, San Luis Obispo, the court, their juvenile court was 30 miles from my juvenile court. And as a result of that, we had families that would move back and forth across the county line. And sitting in juvenile court, it took me approximately a week and a half to 2 weeks to be able to obtain a file on a family that had moved back and forth across the line from San Luis Obispo to Santa Barbara County, which created, frankly, not just a delay, but in many instances, a safety issue in terms of the children that were at risk within the court dependency system. Both our probation department and our child welfare departments, as well as our district attorney, it's not both, it's all three, were paperless in terms of the documents that they prepared. Those documents would have to be printed out at great cost in paper form and then filed in our manila folders, which the surplus of which we kept in containers out in the parking lot. Technology in terms of access to justice is key. And the reduction of fund balances to 1% at the trial court level as well as 2% at the branch level it is going to create major difficulties for those courts that have been essentially collecting funding in order to do the improvements that better serve the citizens and the court users of this state. So I guess my question to you would be, when we burn through the 2% at the state level in terms of the courts that come to us with case management systems that have failed, and we exhaust that funding, where do we go to essentially save those courts so that the courthouse doors can remain open and accessible to our constituents?
The reserve for emergencies that the state has is the available fund source when there's emergencies that require being addressed that go beyond what's been provided in any appropriation. So that becomes the available fund source for any emergencies that arise during the course of the year that are beyond those that have been provided for in the branch-specific reserves that have been established.
I think our concern, if I may, is that in terms of specific allocation to support those kinds of infrastructure failures, we fall back on that 2%, 1.5% in October, and then the remainder towards the end of the fiscal. Once we run out of that funding, is there some mechanism where we can work with you to say, look, this is a critical situation that needs to be addressed? Because my understanding is we're looking at about $27 million, is that right, at 2% reserves.
Right.
You know, if the Los Angeles Superior Court, for example, comes to us, their problem is going to be significantly bigger than Santa Barbara County or Plumas County, Judge Kaufman's County. So it's easy to see how those reserves could be fairly quickly exhausted in an emergency situation.
And the flip side of the equation is what are the reductions that we think are appropriate to be made right now in order to be able to set money aside and have reserves for a problem and an emergency that may occur. So in terms of the process and the challenge is working through the appropriation process for understanding what are the needs, what are the priorities, this establishing the levels of appropriation provided, and then managing to those appropriations. If emergencies arise during the course of the year, there's the statewide reserve. If emergencies arise beyond that level, then the process is one where we, you know, if we all concur that it is emergency needs to be addressed at this point in time, is to seek a separate appropriation from the legislature. But generally, the broader question is, from our perspective, was what's the role of reserves in the context of a state-funded program, and what's the roles of the reserves in setting aside dollars for a reserve at the time when, in order to be able to balance the budget, we're looking at deeper reductions now. And do we? That's the challenge.
Judge Ellsworth. I'm Cheryl Ellsworth from Riverside County. Previously I spoke on the inequities of taking reserves and how it places counties that have been fortunate enough to be provident and have worked in terms of placing sometimes their employee benefits and their workload ahead of budgets and have changed things in order to be provident, only to have those swept. I'd like to speak now to another issue and urge you to urge the governor to convene this working group as soon as practicable. Numbers are important, and that's what we're talking about is numbers. But there's another nuance that is critical to understand, and that nuance or that reality that we have as judges deal with every day is very real. And it talks about public access and safety and justice. And these are very real issues. I think I can speak with some authority. I have been the chair of the Judicial Institute on Domestic Violence for the last probably 6 to 8 years. I've worked on self-represented litigant task forces appointed by our chief. I've worked for a very long time in the area of family law and juvenile through the advisory group. I live in a county that is expansive in size and is underjudged and under-resourced. I have lived through two separate murders, suicide, on the steps of the family law courts in two different decades of the court. I have seen closures of courts and services that have made people, poor people, minorities, and others that are disadvantaged try to get on a bus to get services. These are real nuances, compelling nuances, and if necessary, a parade of individuals who have been adversely affected by the travesty that has been loaded upon the shoulders of the poor, minorities, and the disadvantaged of our communities, then we can do that. Because there are real people that can't get out of the domestic violence situation and live in fear, and children that are terrorized because there's not a court near enough to them nor bus money to get to where they need to be. That is a reality when my neighbor says to me, in our county, we have to close a court. Or my neighbor, San Bernardino, tells me we have to close a dependency court in an outlying area. I don't know if that means that that young child will have to stay longer in that car that you talked about, Judge Rubin, or whether that means that they will stay in a rat-infested drug den for a longer period of time, or maybe in foster care because a parent has gotten their act together. We are here living day to day in a community that is crying out for the services that only the third branch of government, not a state agency, not a department, can give reprieve to those who are not getting access. And it will be on the backs of victims. I've lived through an era where in Riverside County, we all but shut down everything but criminal. And I will tell you, it is not serving your community. It is not the kind of honor that you bring to the bench when you take your oath, because it is obstruction, not access. And that's why we need this working group yesterday, and you need our nuance, not just the numbers. It's not about understanding how we budget. It's an understanding on who we serve and how we do it. Thank you. Kim Turner.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you again, Ms. Masanos. I want to echo what Judge Ellsworth said, and I want to just say that you've heard today from many, many people around this boardroom the real stories, the real issues, where the kind of the rubber meets the road, the victims, the litigants, the folks that are not getting access to our services as a result of the severe budget constraints under which we are all living right now. I want to urge that I know we first heard about this commission or working group that the governor contemplates back in May, and I really want to urge that we get that that working group off the ground as quickly as possible, because one of the fallacies I think that is out there right now is that the branch has somehow not implemented the reforms that were contemplated in trial court funding. And while access to justice may look a little different from county to county and court to court, I would offer that, you know, with some education and perhaps some sharing of information that you may not have, that you would see that the branch has made amazing strides in 15 years to try to implement that vision. And by putting together an inter-branch working group or commission of some sort to take a look at these issues, to look at not just budgeting but also workload and caseloads, data, and the many, many initiatives that we believe over the course of 15 years have really enhanced access to justice and have tried to bring into the big tent underserved constituencies, that you will see that we have already done much of the work that we are not good about marketing on our own behalf. So I really want to encourage you to try to go back to the governor and see how quickly we can get that work underway.
Thank you. I have a question sort of separate and apart from this, but I don't want to move off of this subject. There's anyone else who wants to speak to it? And then what I would ask is, prior, at our last meeting, we did defer a decision regarding $59 million. And its allocation in terms of a $29 million and $30 million. And we did receive a letter from you, it was mentioned earlier, but I wonder here in our public meeting if you're able to speak to the motivations behind your request to delay action on the $29 million, even the $30 million for that matter, that exist in the trial court trust fund.
Sure. Thank you, Chief. Two different. Basically, we wanted to better understand the information, better understand if there were updated data relative to revenues, to a level of resources available, whether there was a level of resources available to support that level of redirection and increase in the level of allocation provided to trial courts. Through that work, one of the concerns that we had and one of the issues is that a portion of the dollars that had been identified had to do with an appropriation that had remained in the item and as a result of an error. So when there were adjustments done to move expenditures to the appropriate items, so move expenditures to the Judicial Council or to the trial courts or wherever it was appropriate for them to be included, basically one item was increased and the other one should have decreased commensurately, and it wasn't. So a portion of the funds were not, you know, it was an error, not the level of appropriation that was intended. For the second, it really had the second level of concern, and the second issue identified is that, you know, from our perspective, there are traditional cycles where we update all of the information and we have all of the relevant data, not a snapshot of a particular data point. And one of our concerns is making sure that we have all of the relevant information to make sure that the level of program can be supported based on the available information, that we not only look at what's happened to prior year balances, but we also look at, you know, our revenues coming in consistent with the level projected. Are there changes that are being made, that are being implemented based on budget reductions or other reasons that are going to affect those revenues and mean that when we came back in January, there were other changes, there were some ups and there were some downs, and there were not sufficient resources to make sure that even funding was provided, and we were concerned about whether or not we have the information to say, hey, these dollars really are available, and we didn't want to be in a position of coming to you in January and saying, sorry, we have to look at mid-year reductions based on other information that offsets this one data point. So that's where we were coming from, and the reason why we thought it was necessary to delay any reallocations until we have all of the relevant information, we know the level of resources that we've got, and also we can make sure that there is not redirection of a level of appropriation that was included as a mistake and was not part of the level of appropriation intended.
Thank you. And I don't see any other questions, so but I have one last request, and it's not to put you on the spot. However, we are poised to move forward with the working group. because we have some of the information in terms of needs and priorities and people who are willing to move forward on that working group. So how soon should we contact you about that?
We, as soon as the legislature wraps up, we'll be in touch about working with you to convene that working group together and begin the work of looking at things like workload metrics, staffing standards, efficiencies, and other relevant data to figure out where we are relative. So very, very, very soon is as specific as that may be.
Is that Tuesday?
That's very, very soon.
Thank you. Any more questions? Again, we are grateful that you're here, knowing how busy you are in the Capitol and providing this information and being accessible to us. You've been accessible to us not only in this meeting here in this public forum, but also whenever we've made a request to meet with you and share information. And we continue to work and build on that partnership. Thank you.
Thank you very much.